Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
Welcome, Hoosier fans, to another emergency off-season podcast, our first emergency off-season podcast here in this off-season, where Indiana and Mike Woodson had a lot of questions to answer about a roster that had 7 holes to fill. You know, who would they get to try and fill these holes? How would they put this roster together? And here, as we stand on Tuesday afternoon, the Hoosiers have just gotten a commitment from the number one prospect in the portal, according to 247 Sports, and that is Umar Ballo, the center from Arizona. This comes on the heels of getting a commitment from one of the top point guards in the portal, Miles Rice from Washington State, which came on the heels of getting a commitment from five-star Bryson Tucker, who was recently ranked number 20 in the latest 247 Sports rankings. And so, you know, we have assembled here a group to talk about this. Rick Bozich from WDRB in Louisville, Tony Adranya from IU Film Room. And we're going to break it all down because, you know, Rick, we'll start with you. You know, for an offseason that was filled with a lot of questions and a lot of needs. And look, obviously, we caveat all of this with saying it's April 16th. You're going to have to see how this all, you know, plays out on the floor. We have to see what the rest of the roster is, like all that stuff. We get all of that. But when you just look at the first three names that Mike Woodson, Indiana were able to get, they really filled some big holes. And I think you have to be pretty encouraged by just the roster rebuilding that we're seeing here in the offseason so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of changed the dynamic around the program at the end of the year. There was a lot of talk about how players wanted to leave. Well, 6 players have stayed. A couple of guys that we, you know, even thought might even test the NBA waters, and Malik Renew and Mackenzie Mbaka aren't even doing that. They're coming back for another year. But the signing of these two guys, it gives them, you know, an elite point guard who's got a couple of years of age. He's not going to come in as a freshman like Cups did or like Huchefino did. So he should be able to play effectively pretty early. And then Ballo's a fifth-year guy who's played at Gonzaga and played well, and he was one of the top, the third-best player in the Pac-12 last year, according to KenPom. He fills a need. You know, I think he ranked in the top 20 in offensive and defensive rebounding percentage at KenPom. And he continues one tradition that Mike Woodson has built of being a guy who – big men trust. First it was Trace Jackson Davis, then it was Khalil Ware, and now you've got Ballo. 3 different style of players, but they're all buying into the narrative that Mike Woodson can coach big men.
You know, and it's interesting because, you know, even back in his first, you know, couple seasons, Mike Woodson was talking about how, you know, playing with 2 bigs isn't necessarily his preferred way to play, you know, and pounding it inside. But when you have Trace, you kind of have to do it. And then, you know, last year they get Khalil Ware, who was one of the top transfers, and you already have Malik Renew. You kind of have to do it. And, you know, this year again, you've already got Malik Renew back. He's going to be, you know, entering his upperclassman seasons. You get Ballo, who, same thing, you know, not a young guy, has been super productive at Arizona. You know, what do you say, I guess, to the people who are like, wait, we're doing this too big thing again? Because certainly that is how it's shaping up. Now, there's a lot of other context, you know, that goes into that. But what is just your general reaction to that? Because when you have Renew and Ballo, you're going to use them to their strengths. And both of those guys are players who have demonstrated that their best scoring, their best offensive attributes are close to the basket.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate concern. And Woody's going to have to do some adjusting as a coach to figure out a way to make both of those guys more effective, including, and then a third guy, Mbaka, who really isn't, I think he's more effective closer to the basket too. Although he was a good 3-point shooter late in the year. He's got a little bit of power to his game too. So that's on Woodson and the coaching staff to find out a way to be more effective with that. And it obviously leads to the next question. If they still have to get some shooters in terms of the four or five spots they have left to fill, they need to get some guys who can make perimeter shots, who can create their own shot late in a shot clock when things break down, some guys who are, you know, shooters and scorers. But, you know, you take what you can get. You still, if you look back at the NCAA championship game, both of those teams had centers, not the same kind of players as Ballo. Edie is, you know, obviously a much taller, much more polished offensive player than Ballo is. And Klingon's more athletic, gets up and down the floor. But they kind of, you know, put a little bit of pause on the thing where you can't play with a big man. You can play with a big man if you put the right pieces around him.
And, you know, Tony, I think that's an important point here. And we'll get into a little bit kind of breaking down some of the individual skills of these players. You know, and you did a great IU film room that talked about Miles Rice, Umar Ballo, and then also Kanan Carlisle, who has not committed, has not even visited, but for whom there is a whole lot of chatter about, you know, him being potentially serious about coming to Indiana. And I think that, you know, that's the big question, you know, two big questions. You know, one that Rick just posed is, you know, you need more shooting to help make this work. But I think the other thing is, when you think back to last season and, you know, why didn't this work? Why weren't we more efficient with, you know, one of the most talented front courts in the country? A lot of it went back to the backcourt and just how limited Indiana was, either through, you know, injury and availability, or, you know, experience in the case of Cups, or just competency in the case of Xavier Johnson, who was so up and down all season long. You know, what kind of an impact can having a guy like Miles Rice and potentially even another combo guard like Carlisle along with Galloway, how can that help make a too big system work better than what we saw last year?
Yeah, you know, a lot of folks talk about like shooting, and you and I have both posted things about how that gets a little bit overblown just based on different dynamics of the team. And a lot of that comes down to guard play. As you noted, Jared, in you know, Indiana's hand was forced a bit last season to play Gabe Cups far more than they wanted to, with Xavier Johnson getting hurt, and you know that wasn't the plan, obviously. And then, you know, Trey Galloway ended up really being the creator and the playmaker on ball screens and stuff. But even as good as he was towards the end of the year, you know, put up assist numbers that Indiana hasn't seen since like Isaiah Thomas. You know, from a consistency standpoint, Rice and Carlisle are better creators than Galloway. So now you've got multiple creators on the floor. And creators, they're called that for a reason. They create shots for themselves. They create shots for others. And when you've got bigs, you know, there are different things you can do than just park a couple bigs on the blocks. What I do think gets lost in all of this is I understand that the two big lineup is a point of contention for Indiana fans. But when Malik Renew and Khalil Ware were on the floor together last season, Indiana's offense was in like the 88th or 89th percentile, or their net rating was, excuse me. So it's, while it's plotting and it can be hard to watch sometimes, I think there is a bit of a revisionist history that like Indiana wasn't as bad as we probably thought they were with those bigs on the floor. Now it's not my preferred way to play and whatnot, but it also wasn't like it was just this big stink bomb and Indiana couldn't score with those guys on the floor. It was really when one of those guys came out where things started to go a little bit sideways for the Hoosiers. So
any bench lineup, you look at the numbers, I mean, it's just, if there's one or two bench guys on the floor last year, it just torpedoed down.
Absolutely. So, you know, we've seen Indiana with the top 30 offense or whatever the case may be with a system similar to this. I think we all kind of understood based on who Indiana was targeting that they were going to go get a five that wasn't named Malik Renew. So why not go get the best one? You know, that should be what's kind of on everybody's mind. In my eyes, it's like, look, based on who Indiana was targeting, it's very likely that they want to start Malik Renew at the four. It's probably was part of their pitch to keep him, is you're going to be the four, you know, at least to start the games and whatnot, and you're going to guard fours and all of that. So it was obvious they were going to go get somebody at this five spot. I mean, they had Williams on deck. They had Payne come in, like, and Ballo. Like, it was pretty apparent that this was what they were targeting. So go get the best possible one you can get, and they did that. So, I understand the contention, and there are things that Mike Woodson has to figure out. But as you mentioned, having two dynamic guards plus a Trey Galloway who may start, may come off the bench, who knows, as a creator, like, that's going to help your offense tenfold.
Yeah. And Rick, we've, you know, spent some time talking about, hey, what can this look like with Malik Renew at the five? And offensively, you project it out, you know, you move Mbakwe down to the four, you have three guys who can attack. It sounds great. Defensively, you're going to run into issues because Malik Renew has not proven himself to be a consistent rebounder. He's not the kind of athlete that is going to block a lot of shots. And we know his availability, you know, isn't always consistent because of the fouls. And so I think, you know, that to me, when you look at Ballo, I think people look at it and like, oh, great, two interior scorers. But I think when you really look at what Ballo brings in terms of rebounding, as you mentioned, being one of the best rebounders in the country, he's a solid shot blocker. He doesn't foul a lot. You know, he does draw fouls. He really, in some important ways, complements Malik. And, you know, we've heard Malik talk in the offseason. He was on the Hoosier Hysterics podcast and talked about, you know, really wanting to expand his game, work more on the three-point shooting. And where this could really work is if Malik becomes better as a guy who can step out 15 feet and face the basket, step out and make some threes. I think we're all in a place where we'll kind of believe it when we see it, but that is kind of the vision. The question I have for you is, you know, what do you think the ceiling can be for a Malik Renew Umar Ballo combo? Because Ballo played with Arizona for 3 years, a lot of times having two bigs. They had terrific regular seasons, but then they would struggle in the tournament. And to me, you know, this is the kind of move, I endorse it. I think if you can get Ballo, you go get him. It really raises the floor, I think, for what Indiana can be in the regular season. I do have questions about how far that combo can take you in the tournament. Again, you have to see what else is going to be there. I'm wondering if you have some of those same questions just about what the ceiling for this could be, and if it also, you know, how high you think it raises the floor for Indiana in the regular season.
It raises the floor considerably. I think it puts them in preseason. They've got to be, with this lineup already, one of the top, what, four or five teams in the Big Ten, I would think, considering how many other players, other teams in the Big Ten have lost, and we don't know who they're going to get out of the portal. It puts pressure on Malik Renew to grow his game. I mean, he's going into his third year now. He made a bit of a jump this year from freshman year to sophomore year, but he's got to become a better ball handler, cut down his turnovers. He definitely has to learn to foul less, especially some of the silly fouls that he creates, and not complaining about them every time he makes one, which he seems to do. And he became a little bit of a better passer last season. He made a number of three-point shots. Didn't he hit four in one game? I think he did.
North Alabama.
I don't know what his tool was, but he had a decent number. But, yeah, mid-range shots would help him. It is going to be a question for the coaching staff to keep those guys separated away where they don't, you know, get in each other's way down low on the block. But as Tony mentioned earlier, the key to how much this team will really improve is to get another two guard or small forward who really can attack with the basketball. You know, it's the old line. I call it triple threat, a guy who can beat you off the dribble, get into the rim. It's a guy who can beat you by passing the ball. It's a guy who can beat you by making shots. And Indiana really hasn't had – who's the last guy they've had like that at the small forward? Troy Williams, maybe. You know, a guy like that, just a better shooter than Troy Williams. But somebody like that who is like – when he's on the floor, the defense has to pay big-time attention to him. And when he beats his man, then another front-court player has to switch onto him, and that leaves Ballo or Renew open to convert.
Yeah, hold that thought, Tony, because I want to talk with you about that. Rick, I know your time is limited, so I want to get you out of here, but okay. I'm just curious. Have you ever seen more upheaval in one offseason between Indiana, Louisville, and Kentucky than what you've experienced covering those three schools this offseason?
No, I don't think I've come up for air in the last 6 weeks, man. Ever since Kenny Payne got fired, It's been nonstop Louisville. I've just written 8 straight columns on the University of Kentucky basketball team, a streak I broke today by writing about Pete Rose. It's the same stuff that you hear. We heard at Indiana several years ago. And initially, it's consternation. Initially, it's a huge backlash against the coach. Then the coach comes in and has a press conference, and everybody falls back in love again. So, yeah, Pat Kelsey's here at Louisville. Mark Pope's at Kentucky. Mark Pope hasn't made any comments about not wanting to come to IU, so that I think the series is still on. So, you know, as somebody who's covered basketball in this area for a long, long time, I just hope that we can get back to the days that we all remember where all three of those teams were forces in the NCAA tournament, and it was a shock when one of them wasn't in the Sweet 16. This year, I mean, not two of them didn't even make the field, and the other one didn't win a game. I mean, something's wrong with college basketball when Louisville, Kentucky, and Indiana aren't in the Sweet 16. That's the way I look at it.
Actually, I do have one more question. What impact do you think Mark Pope will have on the Indiana-Kentucky series? Do you think that changes? You know, I mean, obviously, it was already going to get started with Calipari anyway.
Yeah.
But do you think that the
relationship? No, I think he's an old school guy. He played in it. I think he has a respect for the traditions of the game. He's already come in, and you know, he's been sort of the anti-Calipari. It's like Cal didn't want to play in Maui. I want to play in Maui. Kentucky Senate didn't really embrace Rick Pitino. He wants to play Rick Pitino. Calipari hated the SEC tournament. I want to win the SEC tournament. You know, I mean, he's kind of a turn back the clock guy. So I don't think he'll have a problem with that. I don't.
Nice. Well, Rick, thank you for being able to jump on short notice.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah,
I'll listen to the rest of it tonight when I'm getting off the air.
What's better than watching the White Sox? So, you know, thank you.
I got it. On that comment, it's time for me to leave.
Appreciate, thanks, guys. Appreciate you being here. So Tony, you know, I want to dive in a little bit more here just to kind of how this is going to look, in a couple different ways. You know, one, again, we've got to see what the rest of the roster is going to look like. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why I think we were a little bit hesitant to do these emergency pods, you know, quite as often as we did, you know, last year is it, you know, I kind of reflected back on it and it was so much conjecture without really knowing much. And again, I think even as we sit here, we're still kind of sitting in that spot a little bit, but we do, you know, again, have a little bit more of a view. If you pencil Miles Rice in at the point guard, you know, you've got Mbako and Renu. Ballo's going to start at center. You know, Galloway can be penciled in at that starting two, or if you get a guy like Kanan Carlisle, the guard from Stanford, or another shooter. It seems to me like Indiana's priorities, they have three, you know, scholarships not spoken for right now, would be a shooter, you know, preferably a wing shooter, you know, someone who can come in and knock down shots. They didn't get Connor Hickman, but there's some other names that they're going to look at, and a backup big. Do you think those are the two kind of spots left that they're going to look for and then kind of save that 13th scholarship for maybe a developmental guy or just someone who kind of falls out of their lap that they weren't expecting?
Yeah, that seems the most likely scenario. You know, as you mentioned, a lot of smoke on Carlisle.
I guess we shouldn't assume that. There's a lot of positive things there about him. So
yeah, he's coming to visit this weekend. So if that does pop, I would imagine that pops here in the next 3 or 4 days. All right, what is today? Tuesday, I guess. It's not Thursday. In my head, I thought it was Thursday for a minute. But either way, you know, yeah. So you're looking at Indiana seems to have at least some good traction with, I think it's Hummerkaus, coming from Evansville, Humdinger, as he's been referred to in the Trilly Discord. Yeah, so they've got some irons in the fire there. They've got a visit coming tomorrow, I believe, with the kid from Grace College that was NAIA Player of the Year. That's a 5. Really intriguing to me. Like, now where Indiana's at, let's assume they get Carlisle for this exercise. You're in a weird spot because everything else that you're offering up is probably a reserve role. And so, you know, there's not going to be like guys beating down the doors that are top portal guys to go play in those roles more likely than not. You know, to me, like the top of that list might be this kid from Evansville, Hummerkaus. if you can paint a role of 20 minutes or more to him in a defined role. He's a guy that shot 40%. He's 6'9", 40% from three. He's 6'9". His stroke is smooth. Not only did he, when he entered the transfer portal, he also put his name in the NBA draft. Like he's looking for some feedback there as well. Two seasons ago, he was playing at one of the NAIA high schools up in Northern Indiana. I can't remember which one it is, but he's an NAIA player. So you could fill out your four and your five, your backup four and five, if you will, with some NAIA guys or guys that played NAIA a couple years ago that I actually don't mind. Like a lot of times NAIA players are guys that were fringe, like D2 prospects or so, want to stay close to home. Indiana doesn't have a lot of D2 schools, still can get full rides there. Things like that. And then they just are late bloomers, late developers. Hummerkaus is a great example of that. Went from there to Evansville, produced at Evansville, and now is, getting Power 5 looks. And so that might be how they fill out their roster. But I'm with you in terms of some sort of shooter or guard, and then something at one of the big spots, especially given, I think Ballo averaged like 25 minutes a game last season. Malik Renew got in foul trouble a decent amount, and so I'm assuming that they will certainly want some power there to back them up. I know Farrell Payne from Minnesota visited this past weekend as well. It's kind of up in the air on what that might look like. I think if he would be willing to take more of a reserve role but still get some big minutes, or is he looking to start? Indiana's got NIL power behind it, I think, which is important to note. Like, when you, 20 minutes, you're like, he started for a Big Ten program, he's going to go get off the bench. Well, it's like, well, let's say he can triple or quadruple what he was getting at Minnesota. That does factor in and is important. So, we shall see.
Bags of cash.
Bags of cash, baby. Just tossing around bags of cash here in the transfer portal. We are joined now by another Bozich, Alex Bozich. Alex, from Inside the Hall, your initial reaction to not just the Ballo signing, but really Indiana's entire offseason so far, including Miles Rice and Bryson Tucker as well.
Yeah, like you guys, before the entire roster set, and also before we've actually seen these guys play any basketball together, I think it's hard to kind of project what it's all going to look like or talk about scheme or anything like that. I've kind of just looked at it from the perspective of like what's going out and what's coming in. And I don't think there's any way to look at that right now other than what Indiana lost in terms of outgoing transfers, Peyton Sparks, CJ Gunn, and Caleb Banks. Nothing against those guys. They obviously were parts of the program, and no ill will, I don't think, from the fan base or anybody towards them. But in terms of what they were going to contribute realistically going forward, it was probably very minimal, if anything. And what they're bringing in so far, with Bryson Tucker and the two transfers and Ballo and Miles Rice. I mean, those are guys that you project at least two of them to be starters next season, which is, obviously a good thing. And then Tucker's a five-star kid who's rated, I think, 20th in the latest Rivals rankings. So from that perspective, I think really big picture so far, you have to look at it as a net positive in terms of what's going out and what's coming in.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, I think everybody's had a few days to digest Miles Rice and, you know, what he's going to bring. And I think, Rick mentioned this. I mean, just, you know, the fact that he's 3 years removed from high school now. Missed a couple of years redshirted, had to deal with cancer treatments, then was Pac-10 Freshman of the Year last season. And I know people are a little bit concerned with the three-point shooting number. It's 27%. You know, we've spent a lot of time on Twitter and then in our Substack, Tony, giving people, I think, objective reasons for why they shouldn't overreact to that number. There are a lot of them. We don't need to rehash them all here. But he obviously just, you know, is going to bring a lot of ability to break down defenses, get to the rim, and create. I mean, he was basically the only creator that Washington State had. And so that is going to be a big part of making this all work. When you look at Ballo, you know, a couple of things that stand out. One, he's not just a good rebounder, he's an elite rebounder. I mean, this is, you know, last year he was 20th in the country in defensive rebounding percentage, 15th in offensive rebounding percentage. I mean, the guy just sucks up rebounds. He's not an elite shot blocker, but he's a good shot blocker. You know, blocks 5% of the shots, when he's on the court, which is big for Indiana, obviously needing someone next to Malik Renew. I think, you know, two things that are going to stand out. One is going to make Indiana fans really happy, Alex. The other one is going to concern them is, you know, he's not a foul machine like Malik Renew. Only averaged 3.2 fouls per 40 minutes. So I think, Tony, you know, him only playing 63.7% of minutes was probably more just a conditioning thing than it was getting into foul trouble. But he's not a good free throw shooter. Shot 49.5% from the line last season, which isn't great given that his free throw rate is 75%. So, I mean, he gets to the line a lot, doesn't make him a lot. And so I think, Alex, some people are going to look at that and be like, you know, okay, we're kind of running it back here with a big that's a good rebounder, can block some shots, is relatively efficient. Uh-oh. Did my internet connection go out? Well, I'll just keep talking here and hope that these guys come back. It looks like it went out, but that's okay. Connection unstable. Are we back? Can you guys still hear me? Okay, sorry. My computer just...
sorry, I could hear you now.
Mine did as well. I think it was a StreamYard thing.
Yeah, it might have been a StreamYard thing. I think it just reset. Yeah. So Alex, what would kind of be your response to where it's like, you know, all right, you know, another big who can rebound block shots is going to get to the line, not make many. You know, this feels awfully familiar.
I mean, right now the options were Ballo, Amari Williams, and Ferrell Payne. And I don't think there's any way you can look at those three objectively and say that they didn't get the best option of those three. I mean, Amari Williams maybe fits better in terms of like the modern style of play that people want Indiana to adopt, but I think it's pretty clear that Mike Woodson's going to play the style that he wants to play moving forward. And, you know, I'm not saying this completely takes Williams off the table, but it seems like, you know, at this point he's going to want to go somewhere where he's going to start and play a ton of minutes, and that's likely not going to be at Indiana. So, I mean, when you look at the transfer portal in general, you can only pick from the guys that are actually in there. So I don't see any way you can nitpick an addition like this where you've got a guy who's, I think, ranked the number one transfer right now in the country. I think about 24/7 Sports. I think he's up there pretty high too with The Athletic and ESPN and On3, all those services, right? Rank him high, was a first team all Pac-12 player last season. Does he have some shortcomings as a player? Sure. I mean, you know, he's not a great free throw shooter, as you mentioned. We'll see if he can maybe get to be a guy who plays a little bit more in terms of the minutes load. But, I mean, I watched some film earlier this afternoon, like before he committed, while everything was going crazy there. People were kind of waiting for the news to drop. And he actually moves a lot better than I thought. You know, I was talking to Ryan Carrazza a little bit about this in terms of just, there was a video out there where it was kind of breaking down some of his actions in the pick and roll. And he was, I'm not saying it was like watching Anthony Davis go off pick and rolls and catch lobs, but for a guy that of that size, I mean, he moved and had great footwork and was really agile. So I was impressed with that.
So on that note, looking at the synergy numbers, he was involved in 57 pick and rolls last season as the roll man where he got the ball. scored 1.368 points per possession on those. And so, you know, Tony, this is, you know, the question I have for you is, how do you envision, you know, and I know it's tough to guess what, you know, what Indiana's going to do, although we have 3 years of evidence to suggest what they might do. So I'm curious kind of what you think they might do and what in your mind would be ideal when you look at a guy like Balo, who I agree, you know, probably moves a little bit better than you would think, you know, is good in the pick and roll, you know, it was pretty good as a cutter. But you look at what he did offensively, 41.6% of the possessions that he used were post-ups. And not surprisingly, even as efficient as he is on post-ups, scoring 0.972 points per possession, that's his least efficient offensive move. You know, because as we know, post-ups just aren't overly efficient. But all these other ways, you know, offensive putbacks, 1.71 points per possession. As a cutter, 1.2 points per possession. I said, you know, I already said the pick and roll. So I think he can probably score in a wider variety of ways than people assume. I mean, he's not stepping out and shooting. He's not going to, you know, dribble and drive, that kind of thing. But he's shown that he can be more versatile. And yet again, he's a post-up guy. Malik is a post-up guy. If you have too many possessions that are post-ups, even if you have two really good ones, you're kind of limiting your efficiency. And so, like, what do you do with two bigs like this, who I do think have wider skills than just posting up, but that's kind of their bread and butter, and still try to create an efficient offense out of it?
Yeah. You know, when you look at what Indiana did in that five-game winning streak, they kind of gave us a glimpse into what some of this could look like, and opening the floor up a little bit more. You saw a lot less of, like, the two bigs camped on the blocks and kind of occupying driving lanes. My number one thing that I like, and Indiana had great success on it all season, even before the five-game winning streak, is what's called a horn set, which is, I'm assuming you have the production capabilities of, like, the LeBron JJ Redick thing, Jared, where we can showcase what a horn set is. You know, horn set is basically your two big, you'll see coaches throw it up, horns. Your two bigs on the slots, which is like the elbows, but a little bit higher, and then you've got two guys out in the corners. And when you run those horn sets, you've got a lot of different options. But essentially, the most simplistic form of horns is Miles Rice comes off of an Omar Balo screen, and Balo rolls to the rim, and Malik cuts to the top, and you've got an action there where you've got Rice going to the hole, and then obviously you've got one of your best shooters in the corner. Teams don't typically help off of ball side corner, so if you've got Miles Rice kind of coming off of that ball screen, he's got the big in jail, is what they'd call it, and your opposite corner guy would raise up to take away help. I'm sure you're all completely grasping everything I'm saying right now. I'm talking in circles, but
this is why that, to me, subscribe to Film Room, because you break this stuff down on actual film.
Correct. But that, to me, is like the easiest form of still utilizing your bigs and giving them the ball in places they're comfortable scoring, but also opening the floor up and having multiple options. Like, the one thing I didn't really like about Indiana's post-up actions this season and really in seasons past is it kind of seems like a one-trick pony. Like, you're making reads based off of doubles, but more times than not, you're hoping you're going to get a score from that low post action at the rim. And so with horns actions, you've got multiple options, because then you can, if let's say they guard the ball screen well and Balo isn't open on the roll, Miles Rice doesn't have a shot, well, then you can kick it back to Malik Renew, whose guy is probably sagging in to help. He's got a shot at the top of the key, which we actually saw Race Thompson hit more times than you'd probably expect, kind of on that kickback shot. But then what also happens is you kick back to Renew, and then he reverses the basketball to that opposite guard, and then you've got a ball screen there with Renew. And so you've got multiple options when you run that, what people call horns action. But then out of that set, you can run counters and different things where you can take the guy off the ball screen, and then both the bigs go and set what you'd call a pin down for that guard in the corner to come off for a shot. So there's a lot of different things you can do that all keeps the floor open. You can run zoom actions out of that, which is a dribble handoff and a ball screen, like turning the corner. So I like the horns actions because it keeps your bigs just from, like, occupying the blocks. But as you said, Balo is a good post-up player. They're going to feed him the ball in the post, and they're going to make teams guard that. Now, what I would like to see is more like what the Golden State Warriors would do when they throw it in the post, which is split action. So Indiana tends to stand and just make the defense react, and then you want to kick and create an advantage there. Split action is basically like a guard goes and screens for, or a big goes and screens for a guard to like get a look at a shot. Then that big can slip. That's what I would love to see Indiana do. Like, I don't hate throwing the ball in the post. I hate when throwing the ball in the post and like scoring is your first look, I guess, for that guy. Like, I would like them to run things out of that where you can do other things around it and make the defense work. Because as we saw with UConn, movement is key. Like, I don't know how anybody could watch UConn play and win the two straight national championships and how they play offense and not say, like, how do we do that? And because their movement, I mean, they wore Purdue out with that movement. And it's not like that play necessarily that wins you the game. It's wearing them down play after play after play. Then ultimately, if you're in good shape, like, you end up winning because that movement just creates so many good options.
You know, and one thing when you reflect on last year, I mean, Khalil Ware was not a high-volume three-point shooter, but he had a little bit more ability out on the floor than Balo does. I mean, people aren't going to be following Balo, you know, out on the floor very much. His guy will probably sag in. And I think that's where what Rick said about Malik really needing to expand his game is extremely important for those lineups to work together. Now, Alex, you know, the other thing is it's not like Renu and Balo are attached at the hip and going to play 40 minutes together. You know, they, I would assume they'll start. You know, you would think they'll be in a lot of, you know, finishing lineups together. But, you know, with Renu's foul trouble, Balo, you know, whether it's conditioning or whatever, playing 25, 30 minutes, there's going to be 15 to 20 minutes a game probably where there's only one of those guys out there. And if you get a Hummerkaus and he can play four, you can slide McKenzie Mbako down to the four. You know, that will give a little bit more of a kind of a more modern look where they can do more with just the one big and then other scorers surrounding them. You know, my question to you, Alex, is when you look at kind of what the projected lineups are right now with the guys that we know that are there and what their priorities seem to be for kind of that second guard spot next to Rice, you know, either starting ahead of Galloway or you know, either way, those two guys will kind of work into that spot. Do you have more concerns offensively or defensively with kind of what you're seeing coalesce right now with the roster?
I would still say offensively, because I still want to know who the shooters. I think, you know, I wrote the end of season wrap up for McKenzie Mbako today on Inside the Hall and kind of looked at his 3-point percentage more in the Big Ten than I did as a whole season. And he really got better more as the season got along and he became more comfortable from beyond the arc. So I think he's going to be reliable. You know, the Rice, I know you've written some things and there was an email I think maybe you sent out the other day, Jared, about Rice having that prolonged slump and how that may have impacted his numbers. He projects maybe as a guy I still think can be in that mid-30s or higher range three-point shooting. Carlisle is a guy that they're obviously targeting. He's not committed yet, but just another guy when you talk to people and kind of look at where he was projected out of high school, he looks like a guy that can make some shots too. So I don't think it's I think I would like to see Indiana go out and get a guy who's a proven 40% three-point shooter that can come in off the bench and play 15 to 18 minutes, and you know you have this guy that can for sure help you space the floor. But I don't think it's a complete necessity that they do that. I just think it would be a good luxury to have, because I do think they have some guys, particularly Mbako. I think if he takes the right shots and continues to develop his game, I think he can be a 40% three-point shooter. Maybe I'm crazy on that. Maybe Tony or you disagree, but I definitely think there's a big step forward for Mbako. And I just think with Renu and Balo, I mean, it creates such a mismatch offensively. So I'm intrigued there. But I don't necessarily have a ton of concerns defensively. I would have been more concerned, I think, if they would have tried to play Renu at the five, because the rebounding and shot blocking piece there is just so far off from where it would need to be in terms of the Big Ten, having him at the five. And I think getting Balo, while it may limit things in some ways stylistically, I mean, he's going to be one of the best rebounders on both ends of the court in the Big Ten. The day he steps on the court, he's going to be a shot blocker. He's going to be a guy that's, you know, intimidating to a lot of people in the paint. That's just a presence that I feel like you have that safety valve there at the rim where you don't have to be maybe as worried about guys going to the basket when you have him and down there as you would have, you know, if they would have moved Renew to the five. So overall, you know, I would still say they do need to do what they can to find a shooter, because I think it would be a nice luxury to have. But I'll caveat that with saying that I do think that Rice and Mbako and Carlisle, if he comes, can all be guys that can reliably make 3-point shots. And let's be honest here. It's not like Indiana is going to come out next season and become the Golden State Warriors and start taking 25 or 33s. They just need to be able to make consistently 7 or 8 threes a game regularly. Maybe you have a game here and then where you make 9 or 10, but it's not like we're going to see this high volume. It's just getting the percentage up. And the other thing is the free throw shooting, because, you know, that's the thing, you know, I worry about with Ballo. And you know, Renew was a little obviously better. I think he was in the high 60s from a free throw percentage, but you know, they got to get that free throw percentage up over 70% next season. That's a big deal, particularly in a lot of close games where you're just leaving points at the line. And when your offense is predicated on getting the ball inside and drawing fouls, when you're going to be the worst free throw shooting team, that's just not a good formula to have. I did have one thing I just wanted to ask Tony as he kind of broke down the offensive things there. It was really interesting. Tony, I think you do a great job with the film room stuff. I've told you that many times, but I'm curious, you know, when we talk about, you know, the people being concerned with how Renew and Ballo fit together, are we maybe underselling Renew's passing ability a little bit and how that can work in concert with Ballo? Because, you know, I looked at his, I think he was in the top 20 this year in assist rate in the Big Ten. And that was hard to believe when I went back and looked at the numbers, because it oftentimes felt like when he got the ball in the post, it was kind of a black hole. The ball was never coming back out. And the fact that he was still top 20 in assist rate tells me that, you know, he has some room to grow there. If he can get a little bit more sharp with his reads, I think he can have maybe not the same thing he had with Khalil Ware, but I do think he can be a threat to get the ball to Ballo down in the post. He really showed himself to be a good passer, I thought, last year.
I think you're spot on. And you mentioned his reads is what has to be better. You know, really, can't remember, about a month ago I looked at it, essentially when the reads came from the middle of the, or when the, excuse me, the doubles came from the middle of the floor, he was really good, because he's got a great drop step and he can just drop step to the rim and put it up with either hand and score. When the doubles came from the baseline is when he just kind of like lost his mind and the ball would go sailing out of bounds or he would over dribble it. I think that's a huge thing that he's going to have to work on this offseason is his reads on those doubles. Like, I think Ballo down there will help. Maybe those doubles not come big to big, maybe come from the guards. But also having Ballo down there to cut to the rim. When you think about, let's say Malik Renew is posting up, Ballo cuts to the rim. If they're going to send two, it's going to have to be from elsewhere. And then Malik's got that skip pass that he likes to throw opposite to the opposite wing, and then you've got a guy like a Rice or a Carlisle out there, and even if they're not shooting it, they've at least got a long closeout to attack, and then you're just playing advantage basketball, which is exactly what an offense is trying to do. You're trying to create advantages. So I think you're spot on in terms of Malik's reads. I think you can run the offense kind of how Golden State does with like a Draymond Green, where he can kind of play some like point forward action. We actually saw Trayce Jackson-Davis a little bit with Mike Woodson too in his senior season. Mike Woodson would give him the ball with some space to work with, and then he would make decisions from there. So I think you could absolutely see that. But I think having Ballo, that gravity that he's going to give the rest of the offense, I think is probably understated a little bit too. Like the two big thing, I do think it gets just a little bit overblown, but I understand why. Like, Indiana's offense was bad last year in totality. So, like, I get why there's some angst there, but you add a probably as good of a college big as you're going to get in the portal and two really dynamic guards. And then if you can get some other guys that shoot the rock pretty solidly around there, like, that does change the dynamic quite a bit.
I mean, I think the questions that people have with the offense is, you know, you can be efficient with two bigs, and we've seen it, but it can be hard to be explosive if you have two bigs and you're not featuring the three-point shot in your offense. And, you know, so if you're not going to be a lockdown defense, or even if you are, but you just face a better offense, it can put you in a difficult position, you know? And so that's where, look, I think having a guy like Miles Rice can change that equation a little bit. Certainly if they get another, you know, explosive combo guard, whoever, you know, that might be, that can certainly help. But I do get those concerns, you know, because again, I think it's, you know, what's the expectation here? Like if the expectation is, hey, let's get back, you know, in the top three or four in the Big Ten, you know, get a, you know, top six, seven seed in the NCAA tournament, I think all Indiana fans should feel really good right now about how this offseason is going. But if you're looking at Connecticut play or you're looking at how Alabama played in the Final Four, now I think, Alex, you kind of say, okay, we still have a ways to go to get there. You know, and I think there's, I think Indiana fans are kind of struggling with the cognitive dissonance a little bit of like, hey, we were 92nd. We have a long way to go to get back up to getting in the tournament. And it really feels like they've kind of scaled some mountains this offseason to get there. But there's still a long way to go above that to get where Indiana fans ultimately want to go. And so I understand like, hey, I'm excited, but I'm still cautious, you know, because that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my response to, just to that is like, so far things have gone just about as well as you could have asked. I mean, nothing really has happened to this point based on the information that we have available in terms of who they were targeting and who the priorities were and everything like that. Obviously, Connor Hickman was a guy that they wanted and would have taken, but he went elsewhere. But you're not going to get every guy that you go after in the portal. But I think you just have to kind of, and I'm not going to tell anyone to how to think about the team or the program or the, you know, everyone is a fan in a different way, and how they want to approach any situation is totally up to them. I think just in general, just in terms of being more content with like where the program is moving forward and accepting the fact that Mike Woodson's going to be back for another year, no matter what you think of him, like you want to put the best talent together and see kind of how it all shakes out. I mean, the scenario that's played out so far, I mean, getting arguably one of the top two or three point guards out of the portal, getting the best available big, having a chance now to maybe get Carlisle, who's another guy who, depending on where you look, is the top 10, 15 guy in the portal. I just don't know what else you could ask for at this point. And in terms of also, you know, Renew and Mbako are coming back, and, you know, obviously Galloway as well. It's hard to really look at the situation and have any bones to pick with it, with anything, because, you know, maybe it's not the style of play that you want. You know, you mentioned, you know, UConn or Alabama, but when you were 92nd last year, I think you have to also be realistic just in terms of where things are right now. I know everyone wants Indiana to get back to being an elite program, but at this point in time, I think you just try to get the best talent you can. And I'm not saying that Indiana wasn't talented last year, but just kind of look at what went out, as I mentioned earlier, and what's coming in. And it's already a pretty significant upgrade. And if they can add two or three more impact pieces, and I think the outlook becomes totally different.
I think the difference was last year, there was a whole lot of projection that had to be done in the offseason. It's like, well, CJ could take a jump and Caleb could take a jump and X comes back healthy. Right. You know, we all talked ourselves into it. This guy, especially pointing at myself there, you know, and a lot of those things didn't work out. And the difference now is Ballo is proven, you know, Miles Rice has a year where you really kind of know what you're going to expect from him. Bryson Tucker is a five-star, but right now he's projected, like if you project this stuff out, he's sixth or seventh in the rotation. So you don't need him to step on and be productive like you did with Mbako last year. And so that's where, I mean, I fully agree with you. I mean, the roster is just in a much better shape now than it was, you know, last year. Now, you know, how high can it go? That'll be fascinating to see. But, you know, look, I mean, Tony, we all talked about it. Like, this was going to be a really difficult needle for the staff to thread, to fill this many positions with this many key holes. And, you know, obviously having a really robust NIL program has helped. A lot of people have robust NIL programs right now.
Right.
And the staff has still been able to sell their vision, you know, to guys at key areas and get them to buy in. And so, you know, I fully agree. You know, how high can the roster go? I have no idea, but really, really encouraged by just the fact that it really seems like, hey, we're going to be a competitive team this season. And after last year, you know, that's a big jump. And that's good to see. So Tony, I know you had something you wanted to hop in and say.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about Indiana's offense, you know, last season and even under the Mike Woodson tutelage, you know, it hasn't been good for the most part. And last season, they were 105 in the country in terms of KenPom adjusted efficiency. One thing that we haven't really touched on, but a way for your offense to immediately become more efficient on a points per possession basis is rebounding on the offensive side. Indiana has historically, for years and years and years, been poor on the offensive glass. Last season, 254th in the country. Season before that, I think they were 200 or ish, 197. Mike Woodson's first year, they were 205th. So basically 200 or worse in terms of offensive rebounding percentage. You immediately plug a guy like Ballo in there, who is a top 15 offensive rebounder in the country, your efficiency pretty much goes up immediately when you have a guy like that. I mean, look at Houston. Houston didn't shoot the ball particularly well all season. They were a top 15 team in offensive efficiency because they emphasize rebounding the basketball in the offensive glass. And when you have a guy like Ballo that can do that, hopefully it then translates to guys like McKenzie Mbako and Renew as well to go after that offensive glass. Like, that will immediately help your offensive efficiency when you've got guys that go to the boards and finish. Like, you know, I think you said like 1.3 points per possession or something like that when Ballo got an offensive rebound and putback.
On putbacks, it was 1.17, but that was his second most high usage offensive play type.
Yeah, I think so. When you look at that, like, your offense becomes more efficient. And if you don't have great shooters, which, like, Indiana doesn't seem like the roster is just going to have like two or three just guys that absolutely light the nets on fire. You need a guy that's going to at least go rebound those things. And Indiana's got that in Ballo. So I do think, in a weird roundabout way, although he's another post presence, it does help Indiana's efficiency because he's going to go get offensive boards.
That's a great point. Great point. By the way, breaking news. Evan Mia from evanmia.com just DM'd me and said he has updated his list of the transfer portal rankings, and Indiana now number one after the commitment of Umar Ballo or Ballo. Is it Ballo or Ballo? Ballo? Ballo.
Ballo? Bio? Bio? He's not.
I'm pretty sure it's Ballo. I gotta.
More breaking news. I updated the Torvik roster cast with Ballo, and Indiana is in their Pythagorean theorem, basically, or whatever, you know, the Bart Dag or whatever. They're 0.909, which would slot them about 15th in the country in terms of Bart Torvik. I did add Carlisle in that mix when I did that, but I added Carlisle. Recruit number 20 is what they call Tucker on there when you add him to the roster cast. And then, added Ballo and Rice as well. And yeah, he would project him around 15th in the country with that roster. That's without adding anybody else.
And I think that's the biggest takeaway, right? You know, maybe for folks who are tuning into this and don't know, they haven't watched a bunch of film of Miles Rice, and they're not that familiar with Umar Ballo and kind of what this roster is shaping up to be, Alex, is Indiana was 92nd in KenPom last year. They were not even on the fringes of NCAA tournament conversation. And I think now when you look at it, it would be reasonable to say this is a team that could compete for top four in the Big Ten and be a top 25 team. That's not outlandish now based on what they've put together. They've got to go do it, of course. But that, I think those are going to be the type of projections you're going to start to see come in just because of the talent that they've assembled. And that is where, to your point, it's really hard to be anything but encouraged with what they've done rebuilding the roster. It's only April 16th. Like, they can't go out and win November games in April 16th. All they can do is rebuild the roster. And so even those of us that have a lot of skepticism, and everybody who listens to the show knows where we stand on that, there's just a lot to be encouraged about right now with, you know, with how they've rebuilt this roster. And, you know, what Tony said, what Evan just DM'd, all that kind of, you know, speaks to that.
Yeah, I've been so hyper-focused on IU's roster that I haven't really gone and done the exercise that I typically do in terms of looking at the Big Ten rosters, but I'll start to do that here in the next couple weeks in terms of putting things together. But I can't think off the top of my head another program that's had as good of an offseason so far as Indiana in the Big Ten, just in terms of what they've brought in. And obviously, kind of assuming here that Carlisle commits this weekend, because, you know, I think – or not this weekend, or just whenever, you know, I know he's visiting this weekend, but, you know, there's been some conjecture out there that Indiana's the leader for him. But there's a – sitting here on April 16th, I'm sure there's 10 or 11 Big Ten coaches that have a lot more question marks, at least that many, about their roster for next season, what it's going to look like, than Mike Woodson does. That's a pretty good spot to be in. And, you know, the other thing, people are asking questions, and Tony, I'm sure you guys are both getting this too, whether it be in the Trilly Discord or your Discord, like who else do you think is realistic for Indiana to get? I think at some point, kind of when these starting spots start to fill up a little bit, it becomes harder to kind of get more guys to jump on board, because you look at the roster as it is right now, and you kind of project there's, you know, seven or eight guys that probably expect to play pretty significant minutes, like already on board. And then if you're going to bring in two or three more, it just gets harder to fill out the spots, and get guys to buy into the idea that they're going to have a major role. That's what the kind of the coaches, like, that's the sales part of it. You know, you have to kind of get everyone to buy in. But, you know, I'd much rather be in a position, if I'm Indiana right now on April 16th, where I've got what I have already committed and ready to go for next season, than trying to figure things out, because there's going to be programs that are scrambling into late May and into the summer just trying to fill out their rosters. And it doesn't feel like to me that Indiana is going to be in that spot. I don't even necessarily sure that they're going to have to fill every spot, because right now, as you projected, I mean, you're looking at maybe Anthony Leal and Gabe Cupps, like right now, realistically, like how much do you think either of those guys are going to play? And we're talking about Gabe Cupps played, I think started what, over 20 games for Indiana next season. He's not even coming up right now in the discussion in terms of rotation. That's nothing against him, but I just think they've done a much better job this year, just in terms of putting, I think you made a great point earlier, Jared, just with last year, it was a lot of like hoping Xavier Johnson would be healthy. And then looking at Caleb Banks and CJ Gunn and thinking, well, this is what they could become. Well, that's not going to be the case this year. There's guys where they've already have a body of work. Miles Rice was the Pac-12 freshman of the year. Bala was first team all Pac-12. Carlisle, if he comes, I think had a 31-point game last year at Stanford. That was the highest ever for a freshman at Stanford in a game. That's
against Rice.
That's actual production that those guys have had. So it's not like it's wishful thinking. Yep. And that's not even to mention, you know, Galloway, who had, I think, an excellent season last year based on the role he was asked to play. And Mbako, the potential for a leap forward. Malik Renew was an all Big Ten honorable mention guy. I mean, there's six or seven guys right there that you look at and say, this is a pretty strong nucleus to start with.
And that right there, I think, is so important, is Galloway, right? Who I think you can't be anything but impressed with how he played last year, especially knowing that, you know, he played some of the season injured and, you know, and was just asked to carry such a heavy load. And now it's certainly not that he's an afterthought. I mean, he's your senior captain. He's going to be counted on for a ton, but he slots into a role more commensurate with his skills, right? Where the creation can be secondary. He doesn't have to be relied upon to be a primary creator all game. You know, if he comes around as a shooter, and he should get more of the looks that he got 2 years ago than the looks that he got last year. So he's in a much better position, I think, to be successful. And that's, you know, that's what you want, to really be able to maximize his skills instead of constantly coming on the post-game show and saying, well, you know, Trey's probably a little overexposed doing this. He played really well for him, but you don't want him in this position. They seem to be fixing some of that stuff. Okay, we need to get out of here soon. Tony, there were a couple questions in the chat about Miles Rice, because we haven't done an emergency pod on him. And so I want to spend a couple minutes talking about what he brings. I do want to clean up a couple things real quick in terms of numbers. So Umar Ballo, I think this is interesting, as a sophomore, actually shot 70% from the free throw line on 97 attempts. Now, he's only playing 37% of minutes then. His free throw percentage then dropped to 56.5% as a junior and then plummeted to 49.5% last year. So it seems like there could be some room for growth there, maybe, or maybe he'll just go to 30% this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have no idea. Would say no, Greg.
Right. Well, I know, but we're trying to be positive here. So, you know, maybe there's something there, you know, that they can get that to be a little bit better. The other thing, we were talking about Renew and the passing. I think it's really important with Malik Renew to remember he's not a finished product. And I think sometimes in our conversations of Renew, we really pick apart all of his shortcomings. And I get why, because he has some of them that are really hard to work around. But you talk about the passing. I mean, everybody lauded Trayce Jackson-Davis for his improvement as a passer. As a sophomore, Trace Jackson Davis's assist rate was 10.8. It ended up at 24.8% as a senior. Malik Renew last season had an assist rate of 20.3%. He's already more advanced and has shown more as a passer through his first 2 years than Trace did. And you think about the growth Trace made in that regard under Mike Woodson, and I do think it offers some room for optimism there that some of what you talked about earlier with Malik improving his ability to make reads and to deliver those passes, there's a lot of room there, I think, to grow as he goes from a sophomore to a junior. And really, I mean, to me, that's going to be one of the – probably one of the most pivotal player development stories in the Big Ten is how much better can Malik Renew get? Because if he really makes a big jump, this is – a team that could potentially compete for a Big Ten title, again, depending on what the other teams do. And I think if he continues to struggle, that is going to hold them back a little bit. But I think there's reason for optimism on some of the things he needs to improve on. You saw some signs last year of them getting better. Can he take that next step this year? So just wanted to clean that up from our conversation earlier. Can you give, you know, kind of the 2 minute, and then Alex, I want to get your thoughts on Miles Rice too, just kind of the 2 minute description of Miles Rice's game, what you expect him to bring, and especially when you contrast it with what Indiana didn't have, you know, last year from that position.
Yeah, I mean, just a very, very dynamic point guard that can put the ball in the bucket in numerous types of ways. Like, people call that guy, I guess, these days, like a three-level scorer. You know, he can score outside. He can score in the mid-range, score at the rim. But very, very good in the pick and roll. You know, makes great reads, made the right play more times than not, in those pick and roll situations for a freshman. Big Ten or Pac-12 freshman of the year. The one thing people are going to see is he didn't shoot the three pointer well. He was like 33-34% and then went on like a 0-for-22. Run to end the season that tanked his rankings, which, given what he went through, made a lot of sense. You know, he
you mean missing two seasons?
Missing two seasons, one of them being, cancer treatment. His last cancer treatment was last June, played a full season, the physicality, wasn't able to add weight, which is a big thing when you're a point guard that's trying to play through Power 5 basketball, or Power 6 or whatever, or Power 4, whatever it is these days. I don't even know how many power conferences there are. But just a guy that's going to be easy to root for fans. He's the best point guard, I think, from a college production standpoint that Indiana's had since Yogi Ferrell. Jalen Hood-Schifino, a lot of people will say, like, you know, he went to the NBA after one season. Like, that was more on projection than it was production. Don't get me wrong. Jalen Hood-Schifino had some great games. It was glad he was a Hoosier, but I think his offensive rating was like a 93 or 94 on KenPom his freshman year. Like, in Rice's first year, he was 104, 105 in terms of his offensive rating. So, and that's only going to continue to get better as he projects. He's got great length, 6'7" wingspan, as Jeff Rabjohns reported yesterday. So right up the alley of what Mike Woodson wants for his head of the snake on defense. Got great instincts defensively. Had a pretty good steal rate as a freshman. Then Jared, you noted he took a lot of long twos, which if he can get that shot out of his bag, if you will, I think he'd be a much more efficient player. But
he's
we
not
kinda
going
know
to a program that dissuades people from taking that shot.
I was gonna say, we know where that's going.
That is my biggest concern with Miles Rice. Is he was, I think, in the 90th percentile in long twos taken, and Indiana for two straight seasons has been in the upper 90th percentile of long twos taken. That needs to improve. That's just and this is the question I have with the offense, is how much are they going to post up and how many long twos? Not mid-range, but long twos. How many are they going to take? Because if too many of your offensive possessions are spent with those two shots, it puts a cap on your efficiency. There's a reason that the most efficient offenses don't take as many of those, right? Now, you can say with Purdue, well, they posted up with Edie all the time. That's true. He was a monster. And I think Balo is not quite at that level, but he's very efficient. So, I mean, you can get away with it some on the post-ups, not on the long twos. Got to get rid of that. The other thing I want to mention, you know, and this is something I've really learned from you and your breakdowns on Xavier Johnson, is X was terrific at getting to the lane, highly inefficient at finishing in the lane, which is one of the more underrated skills of a lead guard. Miles Rice-Alex can do that, but he also had a high finishing rate. And that is something that tends to stay consistent. I mean, it can improve, obviously, but you know, when it's already high, when the guy is a freshman, you know, and as you said, you know, really couldn't put on weight and has some physical maturation to do, that's another really good sign of what he can bring to the offense. So, Alex, just curious, any other observations you have of Rice?
I mean, I think Tony hit on a lot of the points in terms of just his game and how that translates. No, I think the thing that kind of stands out to me is just the perseverance of what he went through. And, you know, that doesn't show up on a stat sheet. That doesn't show up on anything in terms of like postseason awards. But you look at where he was ranked out as a high school player coming in to Washington State. I mean, a couple of years ago when we were looking at recruiting rankings, I don't think anyone in this conversation knew who Miles Rice was. He wasn't on the radar of Indiana. He goes to a program that I believe hadn't made the tournament in 16 seasons. Probably Tony Bennett was probably the coach there the last time they made the NCAA tournament. Leads them to, obviously they had a really good coach out there in Kyle Smith, who left to get the Stanford job, but helps lead them to the NCAA tournament appearance. They won a game this year, but you know, I just want to go kind of go back to what he went through in terms of off the court. There's a lot of people, you know, that could be a situation where, the it's not something they can recover from and have, you know, a healthy basketball career. I mean, he's going to be somebody that really becomes a fan favorite, because you can look at his story and we all know somebody in our lives that has been affected it. You know, with cancer at some point, we've lost loved ones to cancer. And, you know, I think that's just going to be a thing that makes him easy to root for, and somebody who is the kind of leader I think that you would want to have on the court. You know, I don't know him as a person, but somebody that is able to get through that situation and come out on the other side and be an all-league player in a league like the Pac-12, that tells me that hard work and dedication is a big part of the DNA of who he is. So, you know, you can talk about stats and everything like that, but if you have somebody that's looked cancer right in the eyes and faced it and beat it, you know, I think that says a lot about him as a person and who he is. And I think that's a great person that you would want to have leading a program. So that to me is what stands out. I mean, you know, we can talk about all the other things, but I mean, it's just a pretty remarkable story when you think about it.
And the last thing I'll say is, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of people who say, well, yeah, you're doing well. You're buying your roster. You're using NIL. And that's true. You know, I mean, we've seen lots of numbers, you know, tossed around. I can't confirm any of them, so we don't need to mention them here. I have misgivings about what it means to just go out and be buying your roster, because a lot of us kind of grew up in this different era of college basketball, certainly a different area of Indiana basketball. And to be frank, I still don't quite know how I feel about it. It still feels weird to be saying, yes, one of the main reasons that we are winning these recruiting battles is because we have more money than everybody else. But if you step outside of that and just look at it and say, here's the landscape of college basketball. There's a lot of schools out there paying a lot of money for players. If you want to compete, this is what you want to do. The bottom line is, I want Indiana to be competitive. I want Mike Woodson to be successful. And if this is part of the path to get there, then so be it. You know, I mean, this is just the game that we're in. And so, again, same thing. I think this is why some fans are having trouble with this, because it feels weird. It feels a little dirty, maybe, but it's all above board now. This is the game. And so I can't sit here and demand better and demand a competitive basketball team, but then say, no, but you need to do it with one hand tied behind your back. The staff is using every resource available to them to give us a competitive basketball team. And, you know, the misgivings about it, that's a discussion for another day about the larger landscape of college basketball and what needs to happen. But for Indiana right now, the staff is out there doing everything to bring a winner, and I can't do anything but support that. So I don't know if you guys have any final comments on that, but I just wanted to address that because I know a lot of people are thinking about it, and there's going to be some sad little Purdue fans on Twitter talking about how you bought your roster, blah, 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 blah. That's not classy. Shut up. I don't care.
You know? I already had one that I posted a video of Balo against Indiana in 2022, and I was just scrolling through my Twitter and had a comment back from a Purdue fan that said, "Now post him against Edie." It's like, why would I do that? No, thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, look, and I even, you know, I mean, I mentioned comments 3 or 4 weeks ago about, yeah, now we're going to go buy a roster, somewhat condescendingly. But the more that I've thought about it since then, it's like, yeah, that's part of what this is now, is you go buy rosters for as long as this is happening. So I fully understand anybody out there who's kind of having trouble processing that. But I think if you're going to demand a winner, you have to let the staff, Alex, use every resource available to them to do it. Because otherwise, you're not getting Miles Rice and you're not getting Umar Ballo. You know, you may not get some of these guys back that you got back. So, you know, I think we got to be fair in our expectations. And so just I tip my cap to the staff. They've done a terrific job rebuilding the roster so far here to April 16th. And now we'll see what happens with the rest of the roster. Obviously, we got to wait till November to actually see games. But good spot to be in for Indiana right now.
Rosters have been bought in college basketball for a long time. I mean, going back to the 60s, 70s, who knows, maybe even earlier before that. It's just become the last couple of years now where it can be done above board. I actually think for a program like Indiana, where I don't think, you know, I can't speak specifically because I don't know all the details, but I don't think it's something that Indiana did a lot historically in the past. Obviously, under Bob Knight, it wasn't something that happened. And since then, it seems few and far between where Indiana would have been involved in something like that. So now that it's above board, I say, you know, you either adapt or you get left behind. And the programs that are going to spend money in NIL are going to be the ones that have the best rosters, and the ones who don't are going to be the ones that are crying in Tony's replies on Twitter, mad that that Ballo didn't pick it, their school. So that's just the reality of it. I mean, to have this whole bravado that, well, we're Indiana, we don't do this, or some look at it like it's some kind of moral thing. It's just, this is the way it's done now. And like I said, it's been done for a long time. It's just now that it's being done in Indiana and it's above board, I think some people are having a little harder time accepting it, but it's just the reality of college sports, and it's not changing anytime soon. The cat's been let out of the bag, and until something, you know, obviously it's not going to change at all. I mean, there's another 2-hour podcast we could do in terms of what needs to change in terms of NIL and how they could adapt. But for now, you play within the rules of what the system is, and you take advantage of the resources that you have, and you try to build a team to win games. I mean, that's why you have a program.
Yep. I don't like the system, but I'm not going to hold it against the staff that they are doing everything they can within the system to win. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yep.
So, all right, my daughter's about to get home from school. Alex, thank you so much for jumping on. Tony, thanks for jumping on. Absolutely. Thanks to Rick Bozich of WDRB. We will be back with another episode of the Assembly Call on Thursday night. We'll get Ryan and Coach and Andy's thoughts on all of this. Make sure you check out our friends at homefieldapparel.com if you want to get this snazzy snapback hat that I'm modeling today, which I don't even like taking it off because it just fits my head so well. I love the snapback hats. But hey, if you're an Arizona fan, if you're a Washington State fan and you want to follow Miles Rice and Umar Ballo at Indiana and buy their gear, no better place to get Indiana gear than at homefieldapparel.com. So check them out. We'll be back Thursday night. Until then, keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.